everyone, and welcome to another episode of Sound Radar, Games Radar's video game music and audio podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Tong, and today I'm joined by two very special guests, Gabriel Knight creator Jane Jensen and composer Robert Holmes. Together, they recently started their own studio, Pinkerton Road. Hello, Jane, Robert, thanks for joining me.
Hi.
Hello, thank you.
So it must be an exciting time for you both, having just launched a new studio and then a Kickstarter campaign where you have fans vote for which game you'll be working on next. So how are you guys feeling about the whole thing?
It's been really exciting and really nerve-wracking, you know, because you sort of really put yourself out there in a very visible way, which I haven't done in many years. So, but it's been exciting and we're really happy with how things have gone and can't wait to get started on our project. So
yeah, I think it's you know, we're very happy with the way it started off, and we also, you know, as it moves along and evolves, we're just getting more and more ideas of what we'd like to do and how we could possibly augment it and different ways that we could add value. So it just sort of gets better and better.
So it seems like a lot of people are going to Kickstarter these days, and a lot of people have had the idea before Double Fine that they're a big campaign. So Jane, how long ago did you start thinking about it, and what was your reason about doing it this way?
We started talking about the studio in October of last year, and we started working on a kids' ebook as a sort of a bootstrap funding project for the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then about Christmas time, we really started getting more serious about it and thinking about this CSG model where we wanted the fans to be really involved with the studio, and we thought that Kickstarter would be a great way to facilitate that. So it was kind of a big surprise and a shock when when Tim went out and did so phenomenally well.
You know, I think we've been kicking around for a while how we would get back to doing some of the projects that we knew we'd had talked about in the background and had always wanted to do, and you know, distractions kept coming up or other projects for other people, and you know, sooner or later you just sort of say, well, there's never going to be an easy time, you know, let's just draw a line in the sand and do it. So this just seems to be that time.
For every successful Kickstarter, I'm sure there are also plenty that don't make it. So what kind of work and preparation went into yours before you actually went public with it?
Well, we spent a lot of time working on, you know, the general message and planning the video and planning the tiers, and I had about 10 different sort of game series lines that I have mapped out for the studio, and you know, just trying to really narrow that down to what we thought were the strongest concepts. And it was a lot of preparation, but now it feels like it was hardly anything compared to what lays ahead of us.
That's true. You guys have your work cut out for you. So the first game you guys are going to be working on is Mobius, which I'm reading is going to take on kind of like a similar vibe as Gabriel Knight. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think a lot of the work that I've done, like the novels that I did, Millennium Rising and Dante's Equation and Grey Matter as well, have that similar, you know, mystery thriller with some kind of paranormal element to it. And so Mobius is definitely in that same family.
And so what have you learned from Gabriel Knight and Grey Matter that you're going to apply to this new project that you're working on?
Well, people really, you know, you sort of learn what people relate to. I mean, people love, in Gabriel Knight, they love the fact that there were real locations involved that they could go visit and elements of true history that were woven into the fiction. And so I've become much more conscious about that and, you know, really try to incorporate that writing the concept from the start. And that's one of the things that Mobius really has going for it as a concept, is that it, you know, it is the sort of story where you're going to be traveling all over the world and it can involve a lot of history and real locations. So I think it's going to be fun to play with.
And then Robert, I saw your video on the Kickstarter page about your music and how you kind of keep these melodies in your back pocket until Jane requests something from you. So as a composer working on adventure games, how do you approach the music when you know that a player is going to be spending a lot of time in each area, like looking at puzzles and talking to people?
Well, it's, you know, it is kind of a challenge, and especially, you know, as the form has evolved and there's much more capability to sort of use the music in ambient ways and have the music react to the player's choices. You know, when we started off in the early days, I mean, basically, you know, you had one opportunity to do something musically within a given environment or a given dynamic, and and that was it. And, you know, in some ways that worked, but there's a lot more flexibility now. So I definitely come from a more traditional perspective, from more of a film scoring dynamic, which is kind of, you know, can you find some really nice, simple, great themes and then find ways to extend those? And that's not better or worse. That's just kind of what I'm drawn to. You know, there's some great work being done these days by people who are really great at mixing ambient textures and having those things combine in a type of alchemy, musical alchemy. And I would like to do more of that, I think, as well. But for a lot of Jane's stuff, what's great is that it's so dramatic and it's so sort of deep in its textures that, you know, there's just no shortage of inspiration for the music.
And then you had mentioned that you have a background in guitar and piano as well. So how did you get your start in video games?
I had been a studio musician in LA and was also doing some engineering and in post-production. And when Sierra started, you know, they kind of went looking for people who had production backgrounds and who had been involved in various kinds of media. And so it was kind of the perfect opportunity for someone like me who had, you know, both a musical background with a fair amount of depth and a production background and could also, to some degree at least, you know, be fluid with technology and get into the technology. So it just really was a sort of a happy mix of circumstances. And I spent the first couple of years at Sierra, you know, really working with some of the other great composers there and helping to translate their work. And then when I got the opportunity to be paired up with Jane and her projects, it just really sort of gave me a whole new level of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And this is a question that both of you can answer as well. But so how are you going to approach the music in Mobius? And can we expect to see something along the lines of that opera scene in GK2?
Well, hopefully not. I think I probably only have one opera in me, and I'm not sure how much of an opera that actually was. But I think there's, you know, Jane is really good at sort of looking at me and saying, hey, you know, nobody's really done this before. Wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And I really, at this point, I'm not sure I know what that is, but I'm sure there will be something like that. And God knows what it could be. But it'll be, you know, it'll be some kind of really cool creative challenge, which I'm looking forward to.
And Jane, did you have anything to add?
You know, I haven't thought too much about it yet. I mean, I know that I really want Mobius to be very cinematic, and it's going to be very dark and dramatic. So, you know, I have, honestly, a lot of times I just sort of leave that in his ballpark because I have enough other stuff to worry about it. You know, occasionally I'll hear something specific in my head, but a lot, you know, or, you know, just a hint, some, you know, maybe I want strings or something, but usually he just does his own thing with it, and that works out pretty well.
So you talked a little bit about this in your Kickstarter video, Robert, about some of your favorite pieces to work on. And I believe you played like the Grey Matter theme. I was just wondering, like, what was it about that theme that you particularly liked?
I really like the sort of simplicity of it and the very emotional aspect of it. I'm really drawn to very emotional music, and it always, you know, music in my life takes on, I think as with a lot of people, it takes me back to a certain place or a certain experience. And the best kinds of scores that I respond to, and actually in that piece I was actually trying to emulate a score that I've really admired, which was for the film Gods and Monsters, which, you know, was just, again, a very melancholy and haunting kind of approach. And I was hoping to try and sort of hit in those areas. And, you know, it's just, for me, it's always soothing when I hear it, you know. And I don't really listen to my stuff as if I wrote it. It's always kind of new to me when I hear it, so that's nice.
And another one you mentioned was Grace's theme.
Yeah. Grace's theme, to me, just was one of the things within the GK world that I felt really... I was happy with the way it sort of brought out elements of Grace's nature that weren't on the surface, things that were sort of boiling underneath. And it actually was the things I find attractive about her character. So to me, I just felt like it succeeded in those ways, and so I appreciate it that way.
And did you have any other themes that stand out to you, like any memorable moments or other musical parts that you liked a lot?
There's a piece that we used as the credits song in GK1, and we had looked for various places in the game to use it and just didn't find anything, but I really wanted to have it in there. And the thing I like about that piece, it's very sort of complex and rhythmical and a lot of sort of musical math going on, and I think I like it because that's kind of actually what's going on in my head most of the time, is that kind of activity. So it's nice just to sort of see it out in the world and not in my head.
Jane, did you have any favorite musical moments?
Yeah, what is that piece that has the kind of the clock? Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, Bob did a piece for a prototype we put together. Actually, it was going to be a game version of Millennium Rising, which I ended up doing a novel with. But it had this sort of chiming clock in the background, which indicated time or time running out. And we ended up using it in a game later. I think it was GK3. But that's one of my favorites.
So what is it like designing puzzles to kind of fit into your world and your story? How do you go about it?
Usually I have the story first, and it helps to be working with a mystery plot line because it really, you know, what you do in a mystery is investigate things, find clues, talk to people. So all that stuff works pretty well, you know, maybe break into places, examine evidence. I mean, all that stuff works into puzzles in a pretty natural way, question people. Occasionally I do have a puzzle idea first, and it was really the case on GK3 where the whole game was about solving the mystery of Rennes Le Chateau and trying to decipher all these ancient clues. And so that game was really more of a story wrapped around a puzzle.
Judging by the amount of money that people are willing to put in at this stage, it's almost like a really early pre-order. So it seems like there's a lot of interest in adventure games. And why do you think publishers have kind of stopped supporting them like way back in the day?
Well, I think that, you know, it was about 1999 when we did GK3, but that was already sort of 2 years after the first big Doom, I think it was Doom that came out, sort of the first person maze shooter game, and it just seemed like the whole industry went completely in that direction. I think it was because you know, PCs had finally gotten fast enough to play action games, and then it just became all action all the time. So for many years, it's basically been impossible to get an adventure game funded in the U.S., That's why I ended up working with a German publisher on Gray Matter. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Kickstarter is the way, you know, it's like the creators want to make these games and the fans want to play these games, and it's the publisher who's blocking the door, and this is kind of a way around that.
And do you think this genre will gain in popularity, although we've seen like point and click kind of evolve into something more like with QuickTime elements instead?
I think it is going to have a resurgence for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, I was in the casual game market for a number of years, and that's quite a, you know, has grown to be quite a respectable sized audience. And it's a lot of older people. There's a lot of women in that audience. So you're seeing things now like hidden object games on Facebook that have, you know, 3 million, 10 million DAU. So there's a lot of big publishers looking at that kind of and realizing that there is a really big market there. And I personally believe that market is really ripe for third-person adventure games. So, and, you know, you can just kind of see the signs. I mean, that's not just the Kickstarter stuff, but a lot of the big publishers are starting to get into more of the hidden object casual game / light adventure category. And I do think that it's going to have more outlets in the future, I guess. I don't know if I want to call it a rebirth yet, but definitely that it's going to be out there in a much more prominent way than it has been.
And then Robert, you know, video game music has also been evolving over the years, and where do you kind of see it heading, and where would you like to be a part of?
Well, I think, you know, it's definitely, I mean, it's matured so aggressively and, you know, really is on par with what can be done in films these days or any other medium. And, you know, it still gets back to me, even though you have a lot of those capabilities, it still comes down to choices. You know, there's a great George Harrison quote that says, if they had all the technology back then that we have now, they never would have gotten anything done. And you know, it's really true. I think you have to kind of do what's right for the creative problem at hand and not just necessarily run with the whole spectrum of the technology. And I think people are doing that to a great, you know, there's a really nice diversity in the kinds of music that are being used now. There's a very, you know, great sort of narrative quality and you know, the music is working really hard at providing value and adding to the experience, which I think is great.
And my last question for you guys. So can we hope to ever see a Gabriel Knight remake?
Yes, I think there's a really good chance that will happen.
Ooh, exciting.
I have had some contact with Activision, and I think, you know, it's just a matter of we need to successfully get through our Kickstarter campaign and at least get, you know, a good portion of Mobius under our belt, if not, you know, ship a successful title. But I think that there's very good chance that will be the case in the future.
Awesome. And so best of luck to you both on your Kickstarter campaign. I look forward to seeing what you guys come up with.
Great. Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Sound Radar. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, gr_soundradar, for updates and giveaways. And as always, head over to gamesradar.com for our ongoing video games coverage. We'll be right back.